Israel got on a bus. It happened to be one that was targeted by the terrorists, and a bomb was detonated on the bus. She was one of the few survivors. A couple of months later, she got on the public transit in Jerusalem again. It was targeted by terrorists. A bomb went off. She was one of the few survivors. After those two incidents, she asked herself, was I lucky that I survived? Or was I unlucky that I got on two buses that were targets? Was I blessed or was I cursed? Blessing or luck? What is a blessing? What do we mean when we say we are blessed? I hadn't been inside the building but about 15 seconds, and I had an exchange with a brother, and he said he was blessed. I said I was blessed. We didn't get into a deep discussion as to what that meant. I think we both had an idea of what that meant. But often, you and I will express the phrase to somebody, good luck, or we'll say I was lucky. What do we mean by that? What do we mean when we say I'm blessed? What do we mean when we say I am lucky? Or should the word luck even be part of a Christian's vocabulary? I was standing in a vestibule a few years ago, and a brother was getting ready to leave, and somebody said to him, good luck. And he turned to them and said, I don't believe in luck. Was he right? Was he wrong? If God is sovereign, does luck even exist? Are there events that he doesn't direct? And if not, how does free will enter this whole equation? Have we misused and misunderstood the terms blessing and luck? I don't necessarily think this topic is the most important that you will hear this weekend. It will certainly not be the most eloquent, but it may be the most perplexing. Do you believe in luck? Does luck exist? If you Google that question, you're going to find people on both sides of the fences with relatively solid arguments. But growing up, for most of us, luck was built into our vocabularies and psychics. Many of us spent more than time than we'd like to recall looking for a four-leaf clover, or holding on to a rabbit's foot, which obviously wasn't lucky for him. In my driveway, which is cement, there are intentional cracks and there are a few unintentional cracks. When I go get the mail, it's not unusual for me to make sure that I don't step on a crack. Why? Because growing up, I had the little ditty pounded into my head. Step on a crack, you break your mother's back. My mother's dead, she doesn't care. Some days I'll say, that's silly, so I'll make sure I step on every crack. And it doesn't seem to change too much. But we all pause when we go under a ladder or black cat, on and on. As adults, we sometimes use luck as a way to try to express humility and downplay our achievements. We'll say, oh, I was just lucky. Or I was just in the right place at the right time. But God is sovereign. Does God intervene in our lives today? Well, of course he does. If you're a man or woman of faith and understand scripture, if we didn't believe that, we wouldn't pray many of the things that we pray for. We're not deists, at least in the strictest sense of the word. But even though God does intervene in our lives today, to what degree And is it always to the same degree? There are several biblical reasons that we have for God's intervention into our lives. Sometimes it's a retribution for sin. In the Old Testament, I believe polygamy caused much family stress. The captivities were as a result of disobedience, drunkenness, disobedience. Sometimes it's an act of prevention. Paul talks about this in 2 Corinthians 12, where his thorn in the flesh was to keep him humble, not get the big head. I think sometimes God intervenes for education. Daniel chapter 4, he did that with Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar ate grass, and we may well see Nebuchadnezzar in heaven if he ended his life, as his last words would seem to indicate. Sometimes God intervenes to help us to anticipate heaven more, to loosen us from things of this life and look forward to heaven more. And all four of those, each of those, would be called blessings, traditional blessings, easily recognizable blessings. But sometimes blessings come to us in disguise. They're not pleasant. We don't want them. We don't like them. And yet, with a little passage of time, we look back with thanksgiving that they did come into our lives. The concept of luck and chance carries the meaning that there is a force that operates for good or ill in a person's life, as in the shaping of opportunities, events, and circumstances, outside direct outside intervention, be it divine or secular. But as I said, the word luck is very common in our speech. Christian or not, we find ourselves wishing others and ourselves good luck. Good luck on that new job. Good luck on that test. It was supposed to rain, but we got lucky and it didn't. We wish ourselves good luck before we roll the dice on a Monopoly board. We say we were lacking, or we say we were lucky if the speed radar doesn't catch us, but rather the car behind us. The concept of luck is applied to a wide spectrum of circumstances, from the trivial to the life-altering. But is there really such a thing? And is it contrary to the sovereignty of God, which is foundational to the Christian faith? Most of us, maybe all, but most of us were born in the United States and were then automatically United States citizens. Is this because we were specially blessed by God over the other 7 billion people in the world? Or were we just fortunate? Dare I say lucky? Well, the question or the answer seems to create a quandary either way we view it. If we say God blessed us in making us citizens of the United States, does that indicate God chose not to bless all the other people in the world? And that God is a respecter of persons? If we say we were simply lucky or fortunate to be citizens of the United States, are we thanklessly taking God out of the equation? Is it better to attribute the inequities that we seem to see to different levels or granting of blessings, or just to the luck of the draw? I find myself in a quandary either way I answer that question. And yet it must be unravelable. In Proverbs chapter 16, verse 33, it says, "Men cast lots, but every decision is from the Lord." Now, you're probably familiar in the Bible with the casting of lots. But that passage says every decision is from the Lord. Now, the casting of lots, as I understand it, involved the random selection or choice in order to make the choice uncontrolled or unbiased by men. We find that in Joshua 18 and 8. Not only the careful plans of the heart are dealt with. Solomon in Proverbs 16 and 9 says, a man plans his way, but the Lord directs his steps. You and I make plans, but Solomon says, but the Lord directs our steps. But is that for Christians? The last reference we have in the Bible to the casting of lots is in Acts chapter 1. Once the church was instituted, there is no record of casting of lots. I can't say it was never done, but there's no record of it. It doesn't seem that God wants us to select our mates, to select our officers, to select anything by the casting of lots. Is it that once God's will was more fully revealed, that the casting of lots or the rolling of dice was done away with? Job in Job 42 and 2 says, I know that you, talking about God, can do all things and that no purpose of yours can be thwarted. Going through that ordeal that Job went through, he is expressing that God is omnipotent and that man ought to be submissive to that omnipotence. Nothing can be restrained from him. Most of the older translations we have of the Bible, the Geneva 1599 and the King James, refrain from using the word luck at all. Interestingly, the NIV doesn't use the word luck. Now, the King James does use the word chance six times. Five of those times, it could be construed to be what we're calling luck. In 1 Corinthians 15:37, it's translated chance, but it really doesn't carry that meaning. But in Deuteronomy 22:6, 1 Samuel 6:9, 2 Samuel 1:6, Ecclesiastes 9:11, and Luke 10:31, in the King James, we find the word chance. These things happen by chance. Luck and chance hold a curious place in our vocabulary. I mentioned the man who is standing in the vestibule said he didn't believe in luck. 45 minutes earlier, he had engaged in a potluck dinner. I'm not saying that made him hypocritical. I just found that curious. Curious things we pick up throughout life, the crack in a floor, the walking under a ladder, the broken mirror, the salt over the shoulder, and a plethora of things. But is there any room for this in the Christian walk, life, mind, or vocabulary? Do we slander God by removing him from the scene when we make such references? A part of our quandary may be that we have a wrong or an askew way of viewing blessings. So let me back up for just a moment. What is a blessing? Is it something good that happens to you? That's often the way we use it. But are all good things that happen to you blessings? And are all bad things that happen to you not blessings? Well, in the pure academic sense, that probably so. But in the way we view it, we tend to judge blessings as something good. We don't tend to say, I am blessed. I have the flu. I can make a scenario where the flu could be a blessing. But that's not the way we think, is it? Is a blessing having 20 shirts or dresses in the closet when you only need five? Is it blessed to have abundant food so we never want, but it causes us to easily forget our daily dependence upon him? I mentioned being citizens of the United States. Most of us would say that is a blessing. And I do not argue with that statement, but let me ask you, is there times when being a citizen of such an abundant society is not a blessing? When did the children of Israel depart? Usually when they were abundantly in our terms, blessed. Would it be more blessed for us to be less blessed? Perhaps wealth and privilege should not be immediately taken as signs of God's blessing after all. Maybe the opportunity to go to Tasty Taco should not be viewed as a great blessing all the time. When blessings seem oh so good, danger can lurk. And we've seen it and we've experienced that time after time. Thomas Malton said, while all things are quiet and comfortable, we live by sense rather than by faith. But the worth of a soldier is never known in times of peace, end quote. What he was saying is quiet and comfortable often feed the flesh rather than the spirit. I and probably some of the rest of you have gone to congregations, and I'll sometimes go up to the elder and I'll say, how are things going? And I will often get the answer, they're going just fine. We have no problems. Everything is at peace. Well, that is sort of a blessing, but I sometimes wish that there were a little bit of a rocking of the boat to get people out of their lethargy. Hardship is therefore often our greatest blessings. Because blessings often come in disguise. It was Tozer who said, too many times we view life as a playground and not a battleground. And I think he'd be right. What is the sovereignty of God? Well, without getting into the weeds too much, God is self-governing. He is independent. He is possessing supreme power and authority. The very word sovereign ends in the word reign, which carries the idea of king, ruler, maker of law. God is the supreme ruler over his universe that he created. God is in complete control over his creation, and that is based on his omniscience and his omnipotence. Since God has knowledge of all things actual and possible, his eternal plan is not based on luck or chance. Nobody goes to heaven by luck, and nobody goes to hell by luck. God has wisely chosen a plan in which all details will finally work together to bring about the greatest good. And the greatest good will be the glorification of God. That is what I believe we will do in heaven. We will do other things, but it'll all be centered around glorifying God because God is sovereign. And yet, having said that, in some humanly inexplicable way or reason, God has seen fit to incorporate human freedom into his inclusive plan. To seemingly set aside on occasion and let his natural laws play out. To even allow man's will to trump his desired will. God allows our will to often trump his desired will. So we have God's desired will. It's God's will that all men be saved. And we have God's permissive will, which means most men won't be saved. Many have attempted to illustrate the interrelationship between these two great truths, the sovereignty of God and the free will of man. But because it is a mystery to our minds, those attempts always fall short. God's revelation is always consistent, but human understanding holds the deficit. If we could rise our thoughts to the level of God's thoughts, then maybe there would be no mystery. But we can't, and so there is. I'm going to take a moment now and turn to a passage that's often used in the discussion of luck or chance. Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse 11. verse 11 of Ecclesiastes 9, it says, I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, neither yet bread to the wise, nor yet riches to men of understanding, nor yet favor to men of skill, but time and chance happens to us all. And I'll be surprised if you've not heard from the pulpit that that is an indication that sometimes things just happen. And I'm not saying that's a wrong explanation. I think it's can be fleshed out. Under the sun, there are no guarantees, is what I believe Solomon is saying to us. The fastest doesn't always win the race. They may stumble. They may stub their toe. They may trip over the runner ahead of them. Just because you're the fastest doesn't mean you're going to win. The best army does not always win. In the American Revolution, the strongest army didn't win. In Vietnam, the strongest army didn't win. In Afghanistan, the strongest army didn't win. He says the wise don't always come out on top. I was sitting in a lawyer's office in Ozark, Missouri, tending to some affairs of my parents. And those of you familiar with that area know that from Ozark South to Branson, if you own some land along 65 Highway, you got a lot of money. And I was talking to this lawyer, and he owned 500 or 600 acres along 65 Highway. And he made an interesting statement. We obviously got off the track a little bit when he made this statement. But he said, we're not smart down here. We just happen to be here or inherit some farm that was on. And I appreciated his honesty. He didn't attribute his affluency toward any skill of his. He was just in the right place at the right time, his words. Would we say he was simply lucky? He hadn't done anything other than happen to be born to a certain family lineage. Solomon says judgment and discernment are not guarantees of wealth. He then says those with the most skill do not always get the most favor. And you've seen this repeatedly. Sometimes people that are most talented don't get the biggest rewards in the workplace or wherever. Why? Well, that's when he concludes time and chance happens to us all. And the word chance there is from the Hebrew pega, P-E-G-A. It means occurrence and happening. And he says that happens to us all. We can run out of time. And in verse 5, he says death can stop you in your tracks. You can have the best plan, you can have the best talent, you can have the best whatever, and you can unexpectedly die. Time runs out. Or something unexpectedly happens, chance. And so he gives us, as I drop down to verse 12, three characteristics of life. One, it's unpredictable. Death can stop us. Number two, it's inescapable. Number three, all of those things can happen abruptly, suddenly, can't be anticipated. I don't believe Solomon was denying God's sovereignty in ordering his laws over life, but he was acknowledging that many things that occur in life are unforeseen, unpredictable, at least by us and to us. And you don't have to be very old in the audience to have experienced that. Is that chance? Is it luck? Does that imply it's outside of God's sovereignty? Or how do we blend these things together? Well, James talking to us in James chapter 4, verse 15, well, 13 and following, but verse 15 says the man is not, on the whole, master of his life. We know not what will be on the morrow. Or tomorrow is the phraseology that is used. God knows. But that doesn't mean God always controls. Is everything that happens God's will? I hear people say, well, if it's God's will, it will happen. I find that to be very contorted theology. Because most things that happen aren't God's will in the strictest sense of the word. Because what do we do more than anything else? We sin. Anybody want to take the position that that's God's will? Now, it is God's will that we have the choice to sin. But it's not God's will that we sin. Most will not enter into heaven, but yet that's God's desired will. But his permissive will overrides that. It's God's will that we have choice, even if our choices are outside of his will. Leaving us with the reality that his will is not always done in that sense. But if that is possible, can he be sovereign and totally in control? We often pray, thy will be done. And I think that's a good way to couch our prayers because it subjugates our will to God's will. When we pray, our effort should not be to change God's will to our will, but to change our will to his will. Because his will is always right. The possibility of sin and disobedience is God's will in that he has given us that choice. But it is not his will as we execute it. When I was learning to ride a bicycle, and probably you went through a similar experience, we didn't have those training wheels that I guess they used to have. Maybe they still have. I don't know. But Dad or the neighbor lady or neighbor girl would run alongside and hold on to the seat while I was pedaling. And then when they thought I had my act together, they'd let go. And somewhere between them letting go and the hedge, I met. But eventually, I didn't go into the hedge anymore. Now, they were in control, but yet they let go so that I could learn. Had they never let go or they had never taken the training wheels off, I would have never learned to ride a bike. My uncle taught me to swim by saying, jump in and I'll catch you. He did. I did. Then I jumped in and he didn't catch me. I learned to swim. Now, he was there if I needed him. He wasn't being malicious. So where does that leave us? God is sovereign. That's a biblical foundation. He is in control. But does he choose to work in different ways at different times on different events? And I believe therein lies the answer. And probably what I've just did is I've ended my introduction. And now for my conclusion, we'll have no body to this sermon. Number one, I believe God works miraculously. When I say he works miraculously, I think there are times when he directly intervenes in a life and alters it. Now today we often can't tell, usually can't tell, but in the Bible there are numerous examples that Paul on the Damascus Road, that was a miraculous event. When Peter, the fisherman's nets were filled with fish, I think that was a miraculous event. It was obvious. The plagues were a miraculous event. The flood was a miraculous direct intervention by God. In the Bible there are healings upon healings. Now, when it's miraculous in the way I'm using the term, they're sudden. Today, I think God may heal us, but I don't know that he always does it suddenly. Sometimes it's more slowly. But when God deals with us miraculously, those are times when he overrules his natural laws to bring about a special happening. What was the miracle of the water turned to wine? They do that all over California. It was the fact that it was done like that. It was the sudden overriding that made it miraculous. miracles to show his obvious power. Secondly, I believe God works in ways that, and you study this, that we might call providential. Joseph, going to Egypt, he looked back on it years later and said, this all happened, and God set this in motion. Esther and Mordecai, they can't be sure, but in the book of Esther, we have that phrase, perhaps or maybe, Esther, you are placed here just for this. Ruth and Boaz, at least Naomi thought it was the providence of God. That's when God takes events and blends them together, but then leaves choice that men had. Boaz and Ruth still had to make those choices. God set it up, but they had to make their choices. In the plagues, nobody made any choices. It just happened. That was miraculous. Providence is God using his natural laws and forces in conjunction with man's free will to accomplish things. So I've got a progression here. Under miraculous, God just does it. Under providence, God uses his natural laws and forces in conjunction with man's free will to accomplish his purpose. God knows the choices men will make, even though he doesn't direct those choices. But what about luck and chance? I believe under the terms luck and chance, God remains involved vis-a-vis his natural laws of creation, but he does not override them, nor does he interfere with them. In the miraculous and in the providential, God is more directly involved. There are areas in our life, I believe, that God has no real preference as long as we conduct ourselves righteously. I'm not persuaded that God cares whether or not you're a school teacher or an engineer or a farmer. He is concerned that you are an honest school teacher, engineer, and farmer. But I don't know that he usually, if ever, really cares about some of that minutia. More often, there is more than one godly choice at our disposal. And God stands aside to let us choose to see if we will use the principles and the precepts that he has given us in the Bible. But he does not override his natural law. But even when he stands aside, if we wanted to call that luck and chance, he remains involved and he remains sovereign because his natural laws of creation are always at play. And they act as boundaries for the choices we make, even when he is not directly involved as he is in the miraculous or even the providential way. Even when things seem to you and I as luck and chance, God is not far away. And he still has boundaries. When my boys were young and they were just learning to drive, Donna and I, and every parent here does this, you say to them, be safe. Well, I still do it. And I say it to other people. Well, what do I mean by that? What I mean when I tell someone to be safe is don't violate God's natural laws and put yourself in harm's way. God's natural law of friction, if we don't violate it, will keep us on the road. If we go too fast around the curve and violate the law of friction, we got a ditch or a tree to greet us. Gravity, friction, will all protect us and keep us safe if we use them as God intended and don't test or abuse them. So even if God has not directly protected my sons as they drive or our whoever as we drive, his laws will protect us if we don't violate them. So he is still involved. Not to the extent he is with the flood and the plagues or with Ruth and Boaz. And if you want to call that luck and chance, I got no problem with that. My problem would be if we use the terms luck and chance as terms that take God completely out of the equation. Then I think we are not on biblical ground. With each descending category, miraculous, providential, or chance, God chooses, He chooses to be less active. And while His direct involvement lessens, it never ceases. Therefore, if we use the terms luck and chance with these understandings, I think we, as I said, are on solid ground. But if we use the terms luck and chance as occurrences outside God's influence or boundaries, then I fear we step out of or deny the sovereignty of God, a place where no Christian wants to stand. What about lucky charms, rabbit's feet, horoscopes, Ouija boards? Well, if we put our trust in anything other than God for guidance, we are not on solid ground. We're not on solid ground. When I was a teenager, I had a lucky piece. It was gold, probably cost 3 cents. I carried that in my pocket for 4 years. I finally said, now this is silly. And I got a little concerned that maybe I was trusting it when I should be trusting God. So I threw it away. I knew if I put it in the drawer, I'd just get it back out. So I threw it away. Now, I'm not asking you to all throw stuff away. You make your own decisions. But when we go outside of God and His word for guidance, when we put our trust in things other than Him, when we put our trust in anything but God, then idolatry has crept in. That's just a fact. I do believe luck exists, as long as I define luck as God working through His natural laws rather than through direct intervention. Do we know when it's one and when it's the other? No, we probably don't. My rule of thumb is thank Him in case He was actively involved, because I don't want to forget to thank Him when He was involved. But I found that man's comment interesting. I don't believe in luck. Now, I didn't pursue it with him. If he was defining luck as activities outside of all God's intervention, then I agree with him. I agree with him. But I don't think God micromanages every part of our lives. And sometimes He just lets the natural laws that He established back in Genesis chapter 1 to work our way with our free will. And we make choices. And hopefully we make choices that glorify Him.